Told that we're, the issue of sunsetting the fingerprinting and 15-day waiting period requirements had come up during a meeting this morning, is that correct?
That's correct, and the committee will find in the packet that was presented to them today, a unmarked document that has alternative one and then alternative two at the bottom. Perhaps for the committee's...
Do you want to describe who attended the meeting this morning? When you talk about a meeting, I'm not...
I would be happy to, Mr. Chair, Representative Norm. In attendance, first of all, Learned Counsel was not there, so I can only, this is strictly hearsay. As I understand it, there was a representative from the National NRA, as well as the original working group that worked on 3470 from its inception and continuation. So as I understand it, it was the original group plus this, some additional individuals. The concern, I think there were a number of concerns addressed at that time. I think there were two issues that were outstanding as a result of that meeting, one of which, as I understand it, is contained in this amendments, and one of which I think is an issue that they would like to re-raise with the committee. They're all probably hopping up and down here. What is being proposed to the working group, or what's being proposed to this committee, is that basically the waiting period, and as I understand it, the fingerprint requirements, and I have not been through this amendment, will be repealed from Oregon law when the federal system goes into place. Now, to refresh the committee's memory, under the McCollum amendments, all gun dealers will be required to have instant identification systems in place so that a person, when they go in to purchase a weapon, would be automatically fingerprinted or had some sort of biological identification made at that time, sort of like a credit card. It'll go ding, 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 and you either come back approved or unapproved. What the proposed amendments do, at least conceptually, is that when that system is online, waiting periods will become obsolete because the audit checks will be done automatically as well as the need for fingerprints. And so the proposed amendments basically repeal those provisions once the new system goes online.
If.
Well, the assumption at this point, Representative Clark, is when, because of the way that the federal law has been written. If the when becomes an if, then a lot of this will have to be revisited. But at this point, the way
no,
that the federal
not.
Law...
I mean, it seems not. It seems like the thing simply would never sunset.
That would never sunset. That's true.
I have less faith in the federal law than...
Representative Clark.
Committee counsel won't comment.
No faith in our federal law. It's less faith.
The way that the McCollum amendments have been written, the system is due to go into effect. However, there's no effect date. So the way that the amendments have been drafted, it's basically when one system goes online, Oregon system, it basically would become obsolete and unnecessary anyway because of the new system, and so it would repeal those provisions that were pertinent to the new identification system.
What's the difference between option one and option two? On the date?
As I understand it, the only difference, and I don't think that Larry is here.
Just the way it's written?
Just the way it's written. One is felons. Subsection two are those persons that under the new bill would be found mentally ill and also have the declaration made that they couldn't purchase a gun. Subsection 3 is misdemeanors of violence, and then subsection 4, as I understand it, is those persons who are convicted of a crime, an element of which is drug or alcohol.
The problem that I see it is that according to this, if we're going to sunset based on this language, we're saying that we're going to sunset when a system which involves all of these particular criteria comes into effect.
No, it's the identification system comes into effect.
Well, of the following individuals, and it enumerates them. And what if they had a slightly different criteria than this? We could say, well, that's not the same as we have in Oregon, so we have to keep both of them around. Wouldn't that be an appropriate way to read this?
Let me track you for a second.
What we're saying is that when the McCollum's system comes online, which lines up with all of our Oregon provisions, then we're going to bump our Oregon provision. Well, I don't think that they're going to draft, they're going to use our language as model language for the McCollum system, so the two aren't going to precisely coincide. They might be similar, but they're probably not going to be exactly the same, which would create a problem because then we would be left with both of them. I mean, the McCollum system will probably be more restrictive, I would expect, or at least somewhere in the same ballpark.
So if I understand your question, and then maybe we can pose it to someone that was there this morning, if I understand your question, the people that are, let's personalize this. I go to the counter and I put my thumbprint down. The information that comes back on that system may not be a identification mark that would necessarily be included on this list, and so therefore you wouldn't have it. You would have.
See, it says that on the date provided in this section, a system which permits immediate identification through use of biological factors of the following individuals.
And your question is the McCollum system using these same identification factors?
Well, it probably won't be. Will be the problem. And this one says that it has to identify these individuals. Well, if they leave one of them out or address it a different way, we're going to have a problem.
No,
we're not going to be sure. We're not going to be sure if this sunsets or not.
That's a legitimate question. Corey, can you respond to that?
Chairman Calhoun, Corey McGregor, Speaker's Office. The intent of this language was to put to rest some concerns the NRA had in relation to, since the McCollum Amendment, they opposed the national waiting period in the Brady Bill and Congress and put in the McCollum Amendment. What we said when we were in the meeting this morning is, fine, if you want to sunset the waiting period when the McCollum Amendment goes into effect, that's okay with us if it does everything House Bill 3470 does. And they agreed to that.
What we're looking at, one of these amendments only talks about one of the sections being paragraph A of subsection 4. And it would seem to me that if we had a whole other system that we were relying on, we'd need to get rid of a whole bunch of the bill.
Then it amends, if I believe at the last few pages, or after the third page starts, what the new bill would look like, or the new law would look like. It would delete and make the appropriate changes to the bill so that basically the checks in the waiting period or no waiting period would be done through the federal system.
Okay, so we are going to have to get rid of a big chunk of the bill when the system, assuming that we sunset it.
Right, if the system goes into effect, which they claim will do these things.
Yes, sir, Representative Miller.
When do we expect this federal system to be installed?
I don't know. I do know they have to come back to Congress and make a report, and they'll say, Department of Justice will say, here's our options, and a fingerprint system will be very expensive, a huge database, very complex, but most likely the general consensus is it'll be a 1-800 dial-a-felon type of setup, which is not law enforcement. That's not sufficient for the same thing that 3470 does, but that'll be the cheapest and easiest thing to implement in the near future. It's a two-part study in the McCollum Amendment. Part two deals with other prescribed individuals, like mental defectives and drug users. That's longer term.
I have somewhere in my file a copy of the McCollum amendments, as well as the study, the requirements of the study. So if you want, if that's particularly germane, I would be happy to go through this morass here and find it.
Up with some language that would just, if we go with this at all, repealed effective on the date the ID system developed is implemented, mm-hmm. or in any event, not later than it's repealed on this date.
Yeah, the problem that I see with this language, and I have a couple of lawyers here on the committee with me, is that from my reading of it, the federal system is going to have to basically be the same as our system.
That's the intent.
If it's not the same.
That's why we have this bill here.
Yeah, that's. I don't see that there's any way. I mean, it's kind of like, could you find another planet in the universe like Earth? Well, maybe you can find one similar, but probably not exactly like it. They're not. I don't see there's much way they're going to enact a law that is exactly like ours. And if it's not exactly like ours, I think that inevitably we're going to be stuck with both systems forever or until we decide to get rid of one of them through this body. Mr. Nichols, do you have a comment on that?
Mr. Chairman, John Nichols, Oregon State Rifle and Pistol Association. The list of prohibited persons in House Bill 3470 is basically the same as for the federal government, their prohibited list under the Firearms Owners Protection Act. There may be a few semantic differences in wording, but we anticipate that whatever the feds will come back, they will be checking substantially the same categories of people as would be checked under 3470. It's just a matter of lowering the stress level of the NRA to have this sunsetted specifically. The working group anticipated that once the McCollum substitute came online, we would come back with a recommendation to the legislature that the Oregon system would be repealed and just go with the federal system because their database and coverage would be so much greater. So it's really a matter of lowering their stress level.
Is that a pretty accurate representation of what the working group, where they were at on this?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mr. Chair.
Council.
Members of the committee. I have a copy in front of me, a copy of Public Law 100-690, which is, contains the Colm Amendments. And without having a full set, and I mean, but actually this is 18 U.S.C. 922, the federal system is going to be limited to convicted felons only, as I read this. And so unless there is another place where the other prohibited persons is going to be included in, this is Oregon's law is much broader.
That's where we're going to have to, in order to make them.
I'm looking for an amendment for my stress level, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman,
we can
have
always.
One. Do you have an amendment for my stress level?
We could probably come up with one. The McCollum Amendment is kind of like Chinese restaurant, one from column A, one from column B. Column A, the first thing to go into effect is a check for convicted felons. Then after that, the Attorney General's has, I believe it's 18 months to come back with the other categories like mental problems, et cetera.
Is that just 18 months to determine or 18 months and they expect to have that online also?
The law says 18 months to have it online. Whether Congress makes some changes in that is,
what if we,
I see Holly
Mr.
shaking
Chair,
her
what
head.
If we, what if we sunsetted 18 months after the McCollum Amendment? So we said whenever McCollum starts plus 18 months.
Mr. Chair,
there's no
solve the problem?
Excuse me?
No.
Yeah. As I read this, the 18 months is only to determine whether or not there is an effective method for immediate and accurate identification of other persons who attempt it. So the 18 months is only to decide whether or not it can be done. It is not mandated that it be put into place.
Mm.
And that is consistent with all the information that I have. It's 18 months to determine. It requires the Attorney General to conduct an 18-month study to be submitted to Congress for plans to expand the system and at that point determine whether or not it would be, to determine if a effective method exists. So they have 18 months to do the study, and then what happens at the end of that 18 months is not clear. It is not a mandatory online within 18 months.
Comments from the committee? Witnesses?
I don't mean to. I apologize, Mr. Nichols. I don't mean to put everybody in a bind. But
well, it still seems to me that,
as I read this,
it still seems to me that if we sunset, maybe I'm missing something. It still seems to me, though, that if we sunset the two provisions of this bill that are causing trouble, conditioned on passage of something from the federal level, and the something from the federal level never happens, so we don't sunset it. It's not our, I mean, at that point, if the NRA wants to come back and ask us to take those requirements out of the bill, we can consider that request at some later session.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark,
am I missing something?
No, it'd be my recommendation.
Huh? That works both ways. Somebody can ask you to put it back in if it sunsets.
My concern is kind of like, one step beyond. I'm not so concerned about, I think we can develop a system that's fair for Oregon now, and I think we're doing a pretty good job of that. But what happens when the federal system comes online? Do we want it to sunset immediately, 18 months afterwards, or if the federal system never comes online, we can be stuck with the current system until we decide to get rid of it through legislative action? I have some confidence there's going to be a federal system at some point in the future, but we might be old and gray before that happens.
Mr. Chair, based on the way that the federal law is written and given what the intent of the working group is, I think one way to address the system would be to separate out those persons convicted of felonies in sort of section one of the section, and then have section two deal with other persons who the federal government is going to be studying to determine whether or not they're going to go online, and have that correspond with what exists in Oregon. That would be consistent with what their intent was, but would make it cleaner. Because otherwise you're going to end up with a conflicting system.
But I think we're still getting pretty. What if we pick a date? What if we pick McCollum plus 2 years? Doesn't that solve the problem? Gives the feds time to get the other things in gear?
We should talk with an expert at the federal level on it, but it's my understanding that we're talking at least to get something that dovetails 3470, that does what 3470 does, a long time, a lot more than 2 years. It's Chairman Calhoun, we did not have, before today, we were just going to operate without, you know, whatever the feds did. We didn't have any language pertaining to it. The NRA would like to see us sunset this if the national, which it's, I can't speak for the NRA, but it's kind of their baby since they substituted on for a waiting period at the national level, which they claim will do everything eventually. And when that happens, then we sunset. And that's what they were looking for.
And I think to be consistent with what they're relying on, if the committee chooses to go in that direction, it would be my recommendation that part of it sunset with the identification of felons ineligible to purchase handguns, and then you have a separate section that deals with the additional study of other persons ineligible to purchase handguns. And I'm just reading right from the federal law. Otherwise, I think you're going to run into real problems.
Why would we run into problems if we did not have this in here to begin with? And now that we're putting something in, saying if federal does what we're trying to do.
In the way that this was drafted, I'm just saying that in terms of drafting, I think you have to separate the two out because part of your federal system is going to come online first. And you don't. And the way that this is written, everyone's going to be mushmashed together.
Is the federal system just handguns or all guns?
Handguns at the moment.
Handguns.
Just handguns too.
Mr. Chairman, John Nichols again. I understand that there's a move afoot to extend that to all firearms, and I think that would solve the NRA's problem. They have a national perception problem at the moment on buying a waiting period here but opposing it elsewhere, and one of the easiest ways out of it is to have some sort of mechanism down in law to do away with it at some future date. I wish all the NRA representatives were here, but that's more or less their position, I believe.
If we were to say McCollum plus 2 years, the legislature could come back and elect to take the sunset off of the Oregon system. That'd be basically regardless of when McCollum hit, then we would be able to have 2 years from then. So we'd have plenty of time, like with any other system that we have in the state that we sunset.
Chairman Calhoun, if we're going to start sunsetting things on specific dates, then we're going to sunset the whole bill on specific dates, not certain aspects of it. Where working group met this morning, everybody was in agreement, including the National Rifle Association and Mr. Gardner. We don't have to include it for our sake. It doesn't appear to me before this bill. Before today, it didn't have anything to do with the federal system, a federal program.
We're trying to, I think, throughout the bill, trying to align this bill with the federal system. And it might, at whatever point we have a good federal system working, it might seem wasteful of our tax. It's also to me personally, it's disturbing to think that if somebody wants to buy a gun, they can go across the border to Idaho and operate under a federal system, and then they run back in Oregon, they're under a different set of rules. If there's actually a difference between the federal system and assuming that we're attacking a problem that exists and the guns aren't going to be bought on the black market or not over the retail counter, that if this person realizes that, they can just run to Idaho, buy a gun, and come back to Oregon. California or Washington, wherever they have to go.
Mr. Chairman, John Nichols again. Personally, and I can't speak for the rest of the people who were at the meeting this morning, but I think Holly's suggestion of sunsetting it in two sections would probably be acceptable, since the felon system is going to be online first.
Mr. Chairman, Lawrence Young, the Attorney General's office, I have a real problem with that idea, in the sense that when somebody walks into a gun shop to buy a gun, you don't know, A, if they're a convicted felon, or B, if they have had a mental commitment such that they would fall under the provisions of this bill. If you attempt to sunset half the bill, which part are you going to sunset? The fact that you've got to do the check for both conditions, one for felony and one for a mental condition. So it's going to be difficult to sunset it for felony and keep the bill intact for mental health.
For that matter, Mr. Chair, you're going to have to also check for misdemeanors of violence and other convictions. So, I mean, Larry's point is legitimate. I guess what I was trying to say was if the federal system is online, if the committee buys all this, what I was envisioning was if the federal system is online, you can just peel off that layer. But maybe it can't be done that cleanly.
Betty, Representative Clark, what do you think about this?
That and forget the whole thing. An 8-10-year sunset. I was moving away from that direction. 4-year sunset.
Stop. I mean, I don't feel like I have a... I guess I'm a little frustrated that what we're doing with the sunset is kind of symbolic, it seems to me.
Because McCollum might never come online.
And I mean, if we're doing this for the stress level of the NRA, if they want to support the bill, then they need to support the bill. If they want a sunset, they need to bring us a sunset, and we need to put a sunset in the bill. I'm always a little bit uncomfortable conditioning what we do on what the feds do. I mean, my view is that we're a sovereign state and entitled to do what we're going to do without waiting on the feds. So I would be in favor of either leaving it the way it is or putting an outright sunset on it.
Find Jeffersonian perspective from
I grew up in Arkansas. Which is still a sovereign state.
Miller. Where are you at on this? What do you want to do with our sunset?
I think a time certain, short time certain.
Are we sunsetting the whole bill or sunsetting?
Not yet.
A certain element of it.
Sunsetting council's reign over this bill.
Chair, can I ask?
Please, I'm discovering, figure out who's writing the bill.
What would a straight sunset do, Corey?
I'm not sure. On the whole bill?
Huh?
On the whole bill?
Either on the whole bill or on the waiting period.
A straight sunset on the waiting period at this point wouldn't be acceptable.
Would or would not?
Would not be.
To
the Speaker's office. And to law enforcement.
What about a McCollum plus 3 sunset?
Well, it's my impression that the McCollum system will not be what 3470 establishes, which was what we've worked on for about 5 months.
Mr. Chair, Lawrence Young, Attorney General's office again. The problem with the straight sunset is that this bill makes a lot of amendments to a lot of statutes, and if you sunset the bill, I suppose what you are in essence doing is making a lot of amendments to statutes conditional, and when the sunset takes effect, either the law goes away or you go back to the prior statute. I think the law just goes away at that point.
Well could Mr. you, I mean, Chairman, you could
sunset the waiting period.
We could sunset. I mean, at the point we've got the federal system, we can sunset basically all our forms, the waiting period, the fingerprints, the whole nine yards you need, because they've got the whole thing happening in the federal system anyway, to the Fed's satisfaction.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think the other option that exists is that, I mean, Mr. Young is right. If you put a sunset provision on the bill, and it would certainly be my recommendation to be a four-year sunset. At that time, you can come forward and you can also introduce a bill that just removes the sunset provision and continues the provisions of the bill. If you put something like a four-year sunset on it, it gives the legislature and everybody that's working with it an opportunity to, A, look at the study results, B, see if it's being implemented, and try to deal with the issues. I certainly would recommend a four-year sunset as opposed to a two-year sunset, because with the study that's being done next session, there's going to be some other modifications. But it's this committee, I mean, the Judiciary Committee has repealed numerous sunsets on numerous pieces of legislation already this session. So to repeal a sunset, you know, 4 years from now, if the committee and the legislature wants to maintain the status quo, it is easy to do in that sense. And it would give, I think, people an opportunity to look at what was going on and decide what parts of it they wanted to keep and what parts of it they didn't want to keep. Certainly with the study that's being considered, if the committee were going to move in the direction of a sunset, given the fact that the study results are coming in next session and you might want to do some tinkering, I think a four-year sunset is, I think, under the circumstances, probably more realistic.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Clark.
Corey, what about a four-year sunset just on the waiting period?
I'd have to talk with the speaker and with law enforcement, but what it comes back to, the question is, why are we just sunsetting the waiting period?
Right, we should need to sunset fingerprinting and the forms, the whole thing.
And the concealed weapons permit.
What we have is a house of cards, and if we're going to pull out one of the cards, we shouldn't glue the rest together and hope that they'll stand up or something. I would agree with the idea of saying, first of all, we need 4 years to see what happens. Second of all, there's got to be some pressure on the legislature and the executive 4 years from now to look at what we've done, where we're going, and make a positive determination as to where we're going in the future. But if what we've enacted isn't working, we've got to be able to fall back on some coherent, reasonably coherent law. And if we have a four-year sunset that says all current provisions in law are reinstated, and we, you know, and all the changes made by this law are eliminated, are sunsetted in 4 years, I go for that. We don't want to amend a lot of statutes and somehow have the sunset read as eliminating those statutes when the sunset goes into effect. So in this case, the sunset's more complicated, and someone would have to go back and unamend all the statutes. It wouldn't be too hard, though. You just keep track of what we did amend and unamend in 4 years. So I'd support that kind of a sunset in 4 years. The whole package goes out, and we're back where we are today.
A lot of our amending, I think, are a lot of cleanup things in current law that doesn't make a lot of sense.
Excuse me.
That's correct to an extent, but Mr. Chair, Representative Manis, I mean, I think from the legislature's perspective, one of the purposes of a sunset is basically to force the legislature to revisit the issue. So in actuality, you could, I mean, as easily repeal the sunset and continue the current law as opposed to putting everything back into place.
All right.
My experience has been that most sunsets get repealed and what has been tried gets implemented, which is not to say that that would happen, but you would be forced to reexamine this issue two sessions from now.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Mannix.
I could see making a distinction between the provisions in the bill, which simply correct some technical things. We could make a sunset provision that just lists the substantive changes that we've made and say these will be sunsetted in 4 years, absent some legislation. That I could see. And that'll take care of the technical stuff, and we won't have to fool around with that again. But I don't see the waiting period as being a singular issue to sunset. I think that there's a number of things you want to readdress after these studies are completed, and the waiting period is one of them. But that does, I think, put us back to where we are today on the waiting period. If the sunset goes into effect, we're down to the 5 days, I think it's 5-day waiting period on handguns. Puts us back So the NRA would have to recognize that they're in no worse position than they are now, and I would think that that would be an acceptable approach.
I would also assume that the sunset would go in effect at the end of the 67th legislative session. Is that right? We're in the 65th now? And sunsets would go into effect at the end of a session, so you'd have all session to debate what was going to happen.
Who's that plug?
Where is the NRA today?
Nevada and D.C.
They went back to Washington. They come in just long enough to tell us what we're going to do.
I would suggest, I mean, the whole notion of what we're doing is trying to say that when McCollum comes online, we're going to get rid of our forms and our system because we're figuring it's not going to be necessary. The McCollum system is not going to have everything in it that we wanted, that our system has. But I pointed out the problem with the language that we currently have is that it's so inclusive of what we do in Oregon that it's possible that the federal system will handle it a little bit differently, and it's never going to coincide, and the Oregon system will never sunset, which is no sunset. So what I would suggest is that we look for something like McCollum plus X number of years and say that McCollum plus 4 or McCollum plus 3 is when the sunset happens to the fingerprinting, waiting period, the form, and all the police obligations to send the forms back along.
Pretty dangerous. Could be a repeating arm. It could be a lot of things. So I would. I'm speaking against the amendment.
I think that is one objection. Are there any other objections to the amendment?
I ask that we call the roll.
Roll call on the amendment, please.
Mr. Chair, clarify the motion, please.
Got a motion to, on line 21 of the dash 11 amendments, delete black powder or, and line 22, add a section that will say, but does not include antique firearms as under section 1, subsection 1, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, okay.
I don't think it would be, I think but would be your appropriate language.
Okay.
I don't think it's.
That's going to be slightly conceptual for council since I'm real bad with the subsection 1 type.
Okay.
Aye.
Any discussion? Questions? Otherwise? Please call the roll.
Still aye.
No.
Miller.
Aye.
Chair Calhoun.
Aye. Motion carries. I think we've got maybe the same problem in our definition of handgun, which doesn't include black powder in there, so we're happy about that. We'd probably want to make certain that we have the same exception, the butt exception that we have in firearm under handgun, to make sure that those are appropriately exempted where you have an antique firearm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think it's lawyer asked. If it's not quite right, I think we could probably get it in somehow into the proper form, but that would be the easiest way to do it would be to just hook the butt on at the end of it.
So you want to, but does not include antique firearms to also be added on to the handgun definition?
Yeah. Does not include antique firearms as defined under section 1, subsection 1 of 166.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mannix.
Why don't we just have a single section that says that this 1989 Act and the current handgun waiting period do not apply to antique firearms as defined in this 1989 Act, in addition to what we just did.
I guess that'd be another way to handle it. There's more than one way to skin a cat, I guess.
Is that where you're heading?
Because you're really going to talk about long guns, too, I would think.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dwyer.
You're splitting hairs here. You'll be here forever.
Let
me tell you, I think that what you need to do, you have to define firearm to include handguns and everything, but exclude antiques as defined in the statute, and then whether it's a handgun or whatnot, it'll be covered.
I don't think we need any butt section for firearm silencer. We would need it for handguns. Would we also need it for machine guns? I guess there could be an antique machine gun, one of those Gatling guns or something. Some crazy person like that. So we'll conceptually move it under subsections 4, 5, 7, and 8, which will include all of our current sections involving firearms. We'll exempt antique firearms from the definition of what those weapons are themselves in order to avoid any other difficulties in the statute.
How much one question. You're not going to exempt short-barreled percussion shotguns from the law because it's a federal law.
Well, that's a good point, Representative Dwyer, but if it was made before 1898...
You can't have a sawed-off blunderbuss under 18 inches. You can have one.
Nichols, please step forward. These are just weapons that were made before 1898 or replicas thereof.
Mr. Chairman, John Nichols again. The Federals and the gentleman from Eugene can correct me if I'm wrong. It's more the ignition system than the type of firearm. If it's matchlock, flintlock, percussion cap, that type of thing, the originals and the replicas are considered to be essentially non-guns. If it's a cartridge firearm, then those physically manufactured before 1898 are considered antiques, but the replicas of cartridge firearms manufactured before 1898 are considered modern firearms because they use self-contained cartridges.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Mannix.
I still think that we'd probably be best served if we just had a separate section that just said none of the provisions of this act apply to antique firearms, and let them off the hook entirely, and then we've not tied ourselves to any other complications.
Counsel, I just when the firearm thing came up, I spotted this as a problem in the bill that we still, under our definition section, hadn't exempted the antique firearms.
I have been working with legislative counsel to get exemptions for antique firearms in all sections that need them.
Right.
There are many sections that she and I have identified as not needing
as defined in section one
to be exempted, but in the way that she and I have been working through the bill, and I think that we have to get further into it, the intent was to keep to those situations that would obviously include the exemption, and they have been exempted out.
Well, that concerns me, so I feel a lot safer.
In my instructions to legislative counsel, but in conveying to legislative counsel the intent of the committee, it was to include in the definition of antique firearms and then exempt antique firearms from all the appropriate provisions of the bill. That's what she and I have been working on, and a lot of that should be included in your Dash 11 amendments. It's obviously you can't exempt it from the whole bill because there are some sections of the bill that have nothing to do with firearms. But as she and I have been working on it based on prior discussions of this committee, we are moving in the direction, if it's not done already, of exempting out antique firearms from all the provisions where it should be exempted out.
Okay. I'll make the motion that we include if something goes haywire on this, just to make certain we can come back and readdress it, but
okay,
that we put the but-for language or the but language that we were using in the other Section 2 firearm definition in Sections 4, 5, 7, and 8, which will include all or exclude all of our antique firearms from the definitions of firearms.
Okay.
Any objection to the motion?
I think it's necessary. Because I don't think it's
Let's
necessary.
Do it, and then if it's a problem, we can come back and we'll fix it.
Okay.
That's put the sunset in too. Okay, any questions, discussion, opposition? Carries. Okay. Let's see what else. Does anybody else have anything else they want to bring up as we're bumming along here through the bill?
I understand, Mr. Chairman. Representative Clark wanted to hear my rationale for my amendment before acting on it. The amendment as to doing a study, or rather looking at using a positive firearms ID, the Dash 7 amendment.
Okay, let's for fun, let's go ahead and address that now. I know we've got a lot of other little cleanup measures in the bill. I wonder, was there a preference? Would you prefer to go through some of the cleanup things first or try to address that?
I could just explain it and see what Representative Clark thinks.
Let's do that. Fine. So, well, we have a, why don't we wait until Representative Miller gets back so that he'll get a chance to hear that, too. And then we'll, as soon as Representative Miller gets back, we'll bounce into that.
All right.
Chair.
Representative Clark.
I can't tell what he's left over there. Are we sure that he's coming back?
He said 5 minutes when he told me, so I expect he'll be back by 07.
Okay.
At that rate. I'm sure I've got my right. I had a concern in the bill about the definition of a misdemeanor involving violence. And I'm a little bit... I don't particularly understand in the misdemeanor involving violence why we have the section B, which seems extremely vague to me, and it would be difficult for me to figure out what that is. By its nature, involves a substantial risk that physical force against the person or property of another
page.
This is on the from the dash 11. This is page 2, and it would be line 12 under the definition of misdemeanor involving violence, which I think is used throughout the bill. In fact, I'm sure it is.
Mr. Chair, I don't know where counsel is, but my recollection was that we lifted that language.
We did some things with this?
That we lifted it from a federal statute.
Okay.
And we did that specifically by motion very early on. I think
that's right.
I think we're
in line.
Starting to be going in circles.
No, that's my recollection also. We borrowed it from the federal definition.
I think we also, by legislative history, incorporated some case law around it. Counsel?
Yes.
When we adopted the language about misdemeanor involving violence, didn't we lift that out of the federal statute?
Yes.
And didn't we also incorporate some federal case law talking about what that means?
Yes.
Thank you.
The only concern I would have here is we're including physical force against the person or property. And I'm wondering if we'd like to just limit that to physical force against people or if we want to include property crimes as well. Sentiments on that, Representative Clark?
I was real comfortable with what we did. The other approach, it seems to me, would be to list out specifically which misdemeanors we mean. And I think that would be a cumbersome process.
A clean way to do it, but maybe not inclusive enough, would be to say that has as an element the use, attempted use or threatened use of physical force against a person. And that would include every instance in which there, it would seem, it's a use, attempt, or threatened use against a person. It would just about include every violent crime against an individual, but exclude property crimes. And then I'm not sure what to make of. It seems to me that Section B is probably included in Section A anyway, but I'm not sure exactly what to make of Section B.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Maddox.
To a certain extent, I think that they overlap. But in terms of Section B, we're talking about a crime that by its nature involves a substantial risk that physical force is going to have to be used. We're trying to look at people in terms of this definition, and if people engage in a particular kind of misdemeanor where that crime itself by its nature has a substantial risk that physical force is going to have to be used, that tells me something about the perpetrator. Physical force against the property of another includes breaking windows, breaking in a door, breaking in a car, and I don't mind saying that the kind of person who does that kind of thing for 4 years is prevented from having a firearm, which is what the later restriction that we impose. We say for 4 years you're kept. Now,
six, counsel? Could we change that to six? To be considered?
We changed other parts of the mental health to six, but misdemeanors remain four.
Misdemeanor is still at four. So, for instance, it seems to me that burglary, where no one was inside,
that would be
is
a felony. So
yeah, okay.
Mr. Chairman,
some sort of a forcible entry, which is not a felony.
I think, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think in looking at the case law, really, I think Representative Mannix has a good point. If a defendant picks up a rock and throws it, the act of violence is the throwing of the rock. If the rock hits a window, you have property. If the rock hits a person that's standing in front of the window, you have a person. And so the issue is really not what the actual ended up where the damage occurs, but what the actions of the perpetrator were. And I think for that reason, the committee originally chose persons or property. It's not what gets hit. It's the fact that there was something that would have caused one or the other to get hurt or damaged in the first place.
Representative Clark, still comfortable with the section, or?
Yeah, I'm still comfortable with the section, Mr. Chair.
Let's move on and see what...
Okay.
Let's move on and see what... As we're waiting for Representative Miller, we'll try to bounce through and see what else I...
Did we vote on that? We took care of the whole section on psychological on Friday.
We voted in the compromise language that we finally got after much time and effort.
I have to apologize, but I was in House Labor, and House Labor has been laboring heavily these days.
We're in labor.
Section 5 has the new language in it, Representative Mann.
Thank you.
The in terms of the, it's been brought to my attention that in terms of the Section 2, where it talks about the sales person keeping the make, model, manufacturer's number, caliber, et cetera, that language already exists in federal law, so we might be duplicating efforts of the individual in order to, well, we might get somebody...
Mr. Chair, that information is needed for the form, so they'd have to do it anyway. In order to comply with Oregon law, they would need to do it.
What is this information, is it going to be used in the study, or how is it going to be used?
That I can't answer offhand. I do know that it is information that's contained on the forms.
It's on the forms, I know, but do we need it on the Oregon forms, and if so, for what purpose? Do you have any notion or idea about that?
What was the question, Mr. Chairman?
Well, the make, model, manufacturer's number, caliber, et cetera, this is on top of page 3, right after salesperson. If the federal forms, for what purpose are we taking this information on the state forms?
Identifying it as potentially stolen.
Federal forms already have that. If we're just taking it for purposes of a stolen weapon, that's already been taken. If we're taking it for purposes of the study, that would be another matter.
Temporarily, Mr. Chairman, I'm willing to leave that in, particularly because of the study, and also because the federal government requires that information anyway. After we have addressed the sunset issue, we can decide whether or not we want to continue to maintain that information.
Counsel, any notion whether that's used in the study for any purpose?
Doesn't appear to be.
Representative Clark, have any feelings on that? I'd just as soon take that out so we don't have duplicate forms in the state for something that's not being used in the state.
I guess I don't see the issue.
We've got the person having to take the make, model, manufacturer's number, caliber, and other marks of identification on the handgun from lines 1, 2, and 3. That apparently is already in the federal law. It's not used for any purpose in the state. I assume it could be used after the fact by law enforcement, but they can access the federal records anyway, so it doesn't really serve any purpose except to require an additional form or additional paperwork to be filled out that's not going to be used.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Mannix.
As I understand it, that's in the current law.
That's correct.
And we're just maintaining current law on that subject. Were we making more marked deviations from current law than we actually are doing in here? I'd like to see a lot of other changes with some other concepts, but we're not. Unless I hear from what I'll call police agencies that they have no reason why that's in there, I'd rather leave it in than take it out at this point. They've been here before, and maybe Mr. Nichols can recall some justification from them. I assume that they're going to use that information right now when it's provided to them to check their stolen weapons list to see whether or not something's stolen. We may make a policy decision at some time. We'd rather not have the state ever have that information, but it's in the current law.
Mr. Nichols, do you have any comments for us on this? What is this information? Is it already in federal law, and does the state have any use for it?
Mr. Chairman, John Nichols. As I understand the police position, and perhaps Corey could back me up on this, they want that for basically to check for stolen weapons, plus on the particular file, plus the study, plus on the any files that they are allowed to keep, which I have understand they have asked to have you put back in the current provisions which allow them to keep handgun records. Sheriff Berksman has made quite a point of the crimes have been solved, and he hasn't specified how many crimes, by going through the records and seeing who owns what particular model of gun when they've recovered a bullet that's unique to a particular class of firearm, and then checked the registered owners of that particular type of firearm against their suspect list.
Can they currently do that with federal records, or do they need the state records?
Yes, sir. To access the federal records, they would have to query the BATF in Washington. BATF would contact the manufacturer in the case of a new firearm. The manufacturer would contact the wholesaler. Wholesaler would contact the dealer. It's not quite as complicated as that. They can do it in a few hours, but it is rather than going to their own files, they have to wait till the feds are open for business and go ask them.
That's the justification for the record. It's more convenient for law enforcement. Of course, it costs the state a lot of money in paper, which is dwindling supply, I might add, with the spotted owl problem. But it, nonetheless, it does have a purpose. I don't see this as any kind of major. Thank you very much, Mr. Nichols, for your help. If we can.
Do we have any other issues that were raised by the conclave today that we need to address tonight?
No, did the conclave raise other issues today? Why don't we get some people up here to tell us what the conclave did?
Do you want me to raise it?
It's one issue. Well, that sounds intimidating.
This is from the powwow among some of the various interested parties.
Mr. Chair, you're about to lose your quorum. Because I've got a commitment.
We'll have to get Representative Brian back here if we're going to. Mannix and I could take a dinner break and go out with counsel and take. Go ahead and let's hear what the other issues real quick. And Representative Clark's going to be scurrying out of the room in a second. Hopefully he'll wait until Representative Brian gets back. Is he coming back? Or?
Don't call him. He left.
He did not leave his files. He did leave his soda, however.
Please tell us what the other issue is that was brought up in the conclave. Or
there was the issue of the keeping of records at local level. It was agreed.
Proposed changes?
Yeah, it was agreed within the group, for what it's worth, that should stay with what current law and what the current practice is as far as keeping those records
at
the local.
This was the problem that we bumped into before, where the police were talking about they were keeping records for four people and this type of thing.
Well, any handgun sale right now, when they get the form, a local, they have to, by public records law, keep it for a minimum of 5 years, I believe. And it's useful.
An amendment being proposed along those lines, being prepared.
I think there was some concern about the private right of action would interfere with the ongoing practice.
That is a concern, yes.
That's another. Are we anywhere on the private right to action?
I'm supposed to meet with Major Renfro tomorrow on that issue.
Okay, so the consensus is that there needs, and there's some consensus in the group, it's just a major stopping point. This is important for law enforcement to have.
Yes.
And once they get this, they're going to be happy to have Representative Clark's private right of action, I assume.
You'll have to talk to them, yeah.
Are the two being connected?
Not to my knowledge. It was, but I'm not law enforcement.
Counsel, can you please state for us conceptually what this amendment is, if you can, and then we'll try to give you authority to move it into the bill.
I have a solicitor. This is not what I had in mind. So
what do you have in mind, Council?
their concern about, no, driving under the influence conviction.
Oh, we could make this a package deal. Let's see.
Let me deal with this other local records issue first.
Let's deal with this one first. Please state for us what basically the amendment is. I think it's to go back to current law. We've apparently tinkered
with
a very delicate balance.
With regards to local law enforcement agencies compiling these records they get on handgun purchases.
What's the proposal? Allow them to do it?
To allow them to revert back to current law in the bill. Use the current, don't address it in the bill.
What do we need to do that, Corey? Just pull out the private right of action language?
No. It's the state police is okay of saying they can't keep a central registry of this information.
Right now it says or any other.
To pull out or any other law enforcement agency.
Only for handguns.
Right.
Let's do that. Let's make sure, Council, that it's limited only to handguns and the locals are allowed to keep it only for 5 years.
Mr. Chairman, John Nichols. There was some debate about this, and I've been told it's going to be handled outside of normal channels, but the city of Portland, for example, keeps handgun sale records for 99 years. If you buy a handgun in the city of Portland, later sell it, go down and tell the city police that you have sold it, they will indicate that on your record. But if you get pulled over at 3 o'clock in the morning, it will come back as you have one or 50 or 100 registered handgun sales, none of which you may any longer possess. And it does leave the individual in a bad state. I would hope that this would be, when it is handled, would limit the retention of them in one's files to the limit of the public record law or until the evidence of disposal of the gun.
How about if we exempt them from public record law but allow the police to keep them? Does that satisfy everybody?
I would satisfy you.
Allow them to be kept for up to 10 years, but they were exempted from public record law? Does that satisfy everybody's concerns?
5 or 10 or whatever the committee...
If anybody's got a better idea, just let me know.
Is this all records or only where people voluntarily agree to have the police?
This is for handgun check, when they get the form for the handgun check.
They get to keep that.
Right.
There's no option. They get to keep it, period.
Right now, they have to keep it under public records.
You want to do it for 5 years, Mr. Chairman?
We can allow them to keep it for 5 years. Is that acceptable also? Okay, instead of requiring them to keep it for 5 years, we're going to exempt the handgun keeping records from the Public Records Act and allow them to keep it for 5 years, and then it'll revert into the same category as all of our other records.
Why exempt them from public records law? I mean, why not retain just current law?
There should
be a reason for doing that if you're going to do it.
The reason would be that if we're saying they can only keep it for 5 years, and public record says they have to keep it for 5 years, the two are going to come together and meet on the same day, and they're going to have one day in which, maybe at one particular moment, in which they have to destroy this record, otherwise they're going to be in violation of one law or the other.
I don't mind saying, notwithstanding the public records law, that they may keep them for 5 years, but are not required to keep them for 5 years, but may not keep them for more than 5 years.
Let's do that if we can. We can do that. It's a little crazy.
Mr. Chairman.
You look perplexed. Yes.
Lawrence Young, Attorney General's Office. It's my understanding that law enforcement, and I have not verified this, but it's my understanding that they object to the provisions on page 4 of the -11 amendments, page 4, line 11, where it says or local government.
That's what I was going to take out.
I think they want or local government stricken from the bill.
We're going to have to make them make a separate.
What I was planning on doing based on this conversation.
Except that, the way I read that section, it applies to lawful purchases of firearms.
I don't know. I realize that, and we're talking handguns, but that's what we're going to have to fix.
And we'll have to put an except clause in here and say except that local government can keep these handgun records for up to 5 years.
My conceptual amendment would be that we specify that it's optional with local government to keep the records. So if they want to destroy them sooner, that's fine. That they may keep them up to 5 years, but that they then must destroy them or properly dispose of them, which means well, destroy them after 5 years.
Within 5 years. So that the amendment would be within 5 years. They can keep them up to 5 years, but must destroy them
after 5 years
after
have
that,
passed.
And I guess they would be subject to the same penalties for keeping records if they were to keep them longer than 5 years.
And this is for handguns?
This is for the just handguns only. Okay. That makes everybody happy.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I cannot say that that is going to make law enforcement happy at all. I think they're going to be upset with that still.
They're going to want long guns.
They're going to want firearms, period, and they're not going to want 5-year limitation.
Currently, it's only handguns. Is that right?
But what this committee did on page 4 in line, whatever line it was, line 12,
11.
Or line 11, you made it illegal to for any division of state or local government to compile or maintain any information on lawful purchases of firearms. That not only outlaws them keeping records on the local level, it also outlaws the study. You have conflicting legislation, and you can get around it, probably, but, you know, in essence, there's also an argument you're outlawing keeping records for the study.
Well, we contemplated that in the committee. We're going to exempt the study from this section so they can keep them for the 1 year.
All right, in response to the rest of that, Mr. Chairman?
Thank you, conceptually. Representative Clark. Certainly. Right. Please go to the record that Representative Clark is excused for the rest of the evening. Representative Mannix.
The intention here, and I'd like this to be drafted into an amendment, is that we are exempting. We're not going to apply this provision to the study. So we're going to exempt the study from this provision. But further, my long-term intention is not to allow the keeping of records on long guns, absent some statutory change in the future, only the keeping of records on handguns. And I'd like to hear the case for doing it for longer than 5 years. Is there a reason why they want to do it for more than 5 years? Besides the fact that, sure, crimes can happen way into the future.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mannix, I do not know personally of the reason that they would want it for 5 years. I would assume that the reason they would want it is because they are able to solve crimes by being able to check those particular records. We can certainly get some testimony from some local law enforcement agencies that have experience with that presented to the committee at the next hearing.
Mr. Chairman? Of course, what we're heading into there is gun registration, which is one of the concerns that some of us have from a constitutional perspective, Oregon as well as federal. And see, I'd like to know that I could purchase a handgun and 5 years from now, from then on, it's not known that I have a handgun in official records. I'll say this with a little bit of a smile, but we need to remember that there were some pretty basic Jeffersonian concepts behind the notion that someday we may have a tyranny taking over our democracy, and some of us may have to defend our freedoms. And it may sound strange coming from a representative from Salem, but some of us want to maintain some protection for citizens to privately be able to maintain.